And good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio. It's time now for Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George. And Dr. George is, she decided she just couldn't take seeing me today and wanted to stay in the fog and stay out of the traffic. And so she's calling in. How you doing, Dr. George?
I'm doing great, Dave, but trust me, it's not because I don't want to see you. That's never the case.
Well, you know, I tell you, this fog is something else here today.
Hopefully it'll blow over soon.
Let me ask you something. I got a email yesterday that was quite disconcerting, and it's regarding this 2.3 excise tax on medical equipment. Do you know in the great Obamacare scheme of things if that is limited to only a hospital or a doctor's practice that the equipment charge is going to be on? Because what happened was it it's all been all over the internet, so I started checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
It was a large sporting goods chain said,
yeah,
no, we're not going to hide it. So you've seen all this, right?
I have.
Okay, so can you explain the situation to me? Because when I went online and started trying to check it out, it was so vague. You know, it was like, well, yes, but not quite, but yes, but we don't know. And where are we with that?
You know, and now the chickens are now coming home to roost on this thing. The best way to describe Obamacare, divorcing it from the medical side, it's a tax boondoggle. It's about taxing folks into oblivion. So that excise tax that they're calling medical device, it's not just going to apply to the companies, but it's going to be passed down the line. It's going to be passed to employers. It's going to be passed in various insurance company premiums. It's not just going to hit that one area. And that company that did that was actually smart enough to make it clear to everybody. It's just going to be rolled in, and people won't see it, but they've managed to make it transparent. That's so, not the only problem, actually, Dave.
But it'll be on any company? I mean, anything that you or I buy from anybody it's going to be on?
It's a federal tax. Why do you think the IRS is gearing up with how many more, 5,000 more agents?
Well, they put on 16,000 or something last year.
Oh, 16,000? I underestimated. But again, that's not the problem. I mean, that's only part of the problem. The other problem is when they say that you can keep your doctor, you can keep your insurance plan. The IRS just came out with a pronouncement that they think that the cheapest iteration of Obamacare, the one that you're going to be mandated to buy, is going to cost the family $20,000 a year. Now, the average insurance for a four-person family now is about 12 to 15. So they've already jacked up the price that it's going to cost the family to buy health care. I mean, it's ridiculous. This is not what anybody theoretically signed up for. And remember, most of insurance is being provided by the employer. Now you have all this downward pressure on employers, not only to fire people, to get under the 30-hour-per-week cap, they're not considered full-time employees, but now they've taken away the incentive for covering your employee. Back in the day, you could write it off as a work expense, you know, a cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
That's now gone. And now the patients who do get covered by their employer, those are no longer freebies. They are now taxable income. So now you've actually increased the amount of taxes, not only that the patient has to pay, but the employer. It's a joke. It's all about sucking money with a straw out of the pockets of people who can't afford it at this point and putting it in the hands of the government so they can decide what you are allowed to have as treatment.
This is
really sad.
Just one more way of controlling us. They're controlling our health. Oh. They're controlling our pocketbook. They're controlling, you know, they want into our bank accounts. And
yeah. Oh, wow. We didn't even discuss that. Everything that you do, everything I do as a doctor is going to be scrutinized and run through the HHS department, run through IRS, and I think also criminal databases as well. So if you put into your social history the patient has used any kind of antidepressant, antipsychotic, trust me, they want to link that so the person can never get a gun, for example, or perhaps even a job with the government. This is just an amazing amount of command and control under the guise of helping everybody. It's amazing. Somebody said they wanted to call it, instead of the Affordable Care Act, the Unaffordable Care Act. That's true.
You know, I had a situation, or one of our hosts that you know, his daughter works at a local hospital, and it was amazing. When they got their first check in January with the new check cut, the employees were blaming the hospital and still didn't realize it had nothing to do with their employer. It was all about Obamacare.
I don't understand how people can be that delusional. We spent a whole, you know, campaign season talking about how the Democrats want to raise taxes. And how on earth can you possibly think it's the hospital's fault after all of the hot air that was blown into this thing? I gave my employee a raise. She didn't see a dime of it. It basically stayed the same because of what got taken out from the new taxes.
What did she say when you did that, or when she got her check?
Well, she didn't see any change, so fortunately she didn't have a decrease. But I did tell her, you know, I gave you a raise. I mean, a significant one, too. And she, you know, we both just shrugged our shoulders. This is just, you're not going to get what you're paying for. And I'm just disgusted by the entire exercise, that people still think that this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's just the team mentality. My team won. Doesn't matter that I'm not going to get anything for it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do worse because of it. But I'm just so caught up in the winning aspect of it that I can't see the forest for the trees. It's really amazing. It's like a massive gnosis.
Well, it's sort of like I don't know if you saw the notice today that we know the government can do such a fine job of running things, sort of like the post office announcing that in August 1st, no more Saturday delivery.
Oh, they announced that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they raised some rates, too, on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then I heard of something that they said they don't have to follow local traffic laws. They can do what they want to do. Mm.
Really?
It's like a monster run amok, isn't it?
In medicine, and you know, you said, how can doctors, what are you seeing? Are they beginning to wake up and smell the bad smell?
Dave, this is, you know, we need to go to probably, we'll go into it more after the break, but this is such a, it's an overwhelming takeover of medicine that it boggles the mind. I don't think the average doctor even knows what hit them. Yesterday, when I was in the operating room, we had a discussion about a group of doctors who, I think they were neurosurgeons in South of Georgia, who had a thriving practice, but for whatever reason, the hospital came calling and they decided to sell their practice to the hospital. Mm. Now they're in a position where they can't wait to retire and get out of medicine because it's so horrible practicing. So they've gone from being freestanding, autonomous, free-thinking doctors to having to be drones for the hospital. So it's all about doing tests. It's all about, you know, following the hospital protocol for treating illnesses. And it's about controlling their doctor-patient relationship. They're making less money because they're now, you know, on the payroll. And so they're working harder for less. They're not able to be advocates for their patients anymore. And they're stuck. They can't buy their practice back because they sold it to the hospital. So the only alternative they have now is to retire. They're just counting the days until they can get out of medicine. That is the underlying template for what's going to happen, and is happening as we speak, to doctors in this country. I think at this point, some of them are still in the honeymoon part of it, where they think they're going to get something, or they're doing it out of fear. If I don't join the hospital practice, I won't have a business. And you know what? That's actually true. Because the hospitals are now so mercenary. In my case, they bought up all of the surgery centers around my office. So I could no longer take patients to a cheaper, better alternative because the hospitals have no control over all of them. It's like one left. And that's what they did to us. So now I have no choice but to take patients to a more expensive location.
Yeah.
Another thing I've noticed, too, is that the hospitals aren't offering the same things that I do as a solo practitioner. It's about money for them. It's not about innovation. So if they're not going to get reimbursed for something, they're not going to offer it. And for me, that's a bad thing. So I can't do balloon sinuplasty, for example, in certain surgery centers because they won't allow it. That's not good for my patient, but it's not about patient care.
It's about the... Do you remember the old Tennessee Ernie Ford song, 16 Tons?
I think I've heard it.
Well, there's a line in there that says, I've sold my soul to the company store.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Do you think that's what we're doing? Do you think that's what doctors are doing, selling their souls to the hospitals?
Yeah, no question, but they don't realize what they're signing onto. You know, that's a deal with the devil. They don't get it yet. Now, the flip side of this is if they wait long enough, they're not going to have any more fighters. They're just going to have drones who just are cookie-cutter docs who come out and are ready to go into the system. At this point, I read an article, 53% of cardiologists, I think in the country, are now hospital employees. They're no longer freestanding. That is a horrible trend. A majority of cardiologists no longer control their fate. And a majority of people graduating from medical schools want to become employees, not open their own practice. That's sad. So they're changing the culture of medicine. It's gone from being an entrepreneur and being, you know, a free thinker, out-of-the-box kind of person to somebody who is looking over your shoulders, part of Big Brother, who's literally putting down your health information into a database that can be used against you. I warned about this years ago in an article that I wrote, in a blog that I wrote. Big Brother is watching. As soon as you go electronic medical information system, as soon as that's in place, in the next 2 or 3 years, all hospitals will have it. All doctor's offices will have it. It'll be linked in with the government agencies, IRS, probably FBI, who knows? I wouldn't doubt that. Definitely Human Health Secretary Office. And they're going to know exactly what I put in real time into a patient chart. And if I don't document it properly, I won't get paid for it. Or if I'm part of a hospital system, I'll be considered a disruptive doctor. And I'll have peer review sicked on me, and I will no longer be able to practice medicine. This is what they're doing. First, they've corralled us as physicians into a system where we have to, you know, follow their pronouncements or not get paid if we take Medicare or Medicaid. Those of us who jumped out of that system, they're coming for us left and right. And after the break, I'll go into more detail about what that means for average doctors, because it's no longer. I think the noose is really closing on us as a profession. Not only do they fingerprint us, do background checks,
and then want you to be the tattletale on your patients, which is...
They have questions about, do you have guns in your home?
Yeah, jeez.
You know, do you have a living will? Do you have advanced directive? What kind of question? I'm not asking those questions. I'm an ENT. Well, I don't care if you have an advanced directive, right? It's none of my business. I can see if you're in the hospital and you're admitted and you have a serious illness. That's appropriate. But not in a face-to-face office visit. The pediatricians are doing this 24/7. They ask all sorts of questions. Next thing you know, you've got defects coming down on you because you answered it truthfully. But yeah. In their mind,
have you ever given
a red flag.
Have you ever given your child a spanking?
Oh, God, yeah.
Let's take that break, and we'll be back with Medicine on Call right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that an inability to lose weight can be due to an underactive thyroid gland? The thyroid gland is an important organ that controls the metabolism. Signs of an underactive thyroid gland include depression, hair loss, weight gain, a low blood pressure, feeling cold, constipation, and a lower libido. Risks for low thyroid function include iron deficiency, liver dysfunction, family history of thyroid disease, and an irregularity in the immune system. If you have noticed any of these symptoms, or you have noticed swelling in the front of your neck, or the collar of your shirt feels tight, you should see your doctor for further evaluation, including blood tests to evaluate the levels of thyroid hormone in your bloodstream. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back on Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George, and the public has to wake up and in turn wake the doctors up that we're not sheep, we don't have four legs, we're not going to be herded into a cattle car with all sorts of promises and taken to the gas chamber. I know they'd like to do that. People are finally even waking up, and this has happened in the past couple of weeks, with all the caskets, the three-layer caskets out in Madison, Georgia. Mm-hmm. People are beginning to say, why do they need those? Why does Homeland Security need 1.4 billion rounds of ammunition?
Why does the Weather Service need it? I mean, you want to ask yourself that question, too.
Yeah, Noah?
There's something undercurrent going on that's not in our favor as Americans. There's no question about that. And as a physician, we're on the chopping block. We're now becoming part of a system that's going to totally go counter to what we're about as physicians, which is healing people, which is protecting our patients, which is being an advocate for our patients. We are now being held at gunpoint, literally, to follow the system or you go to jail or you no longer will be in practice. That's our choices. So I wanted to go further into that we started talking about it before the break.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you about the other side of it, where they're now indoctrinating the new medical students to become parts of the cogs in the wheel. They don't even do anatomy in some places anymore, where they have to dissect cadavers. They don't even do that. It's virtual. They come out surgeons. I did 1,000 cases before I graduated residency. They now come out thinking, I don't feel comfortable. I still need someone to sit with me to do a procedure. And this is after finishing residency, okay? Which means they're not trained. But they don't have any self, you know, I wouldn't say respect. That's a bad way to put it. But confidence.
You know,
if you can't go through 6 years of training and be confident when you're out, there's a problem there, don't you think?
Can you imagine, and I can remember back not only television shows, but actual situations in medical schools where the first time a student gets to the cadaver, they pass out. What the hell's going to happen if they've been using the computer and you know, and then all of a sudden they have a patient in front, and they get blood on them, or they see blood, or the patient doesn't react?
you may not see blood, since probably very little surgery is going to be going on underneath under this new system. Okay, you're going to be looking at an iPad with algorithms that light up and tell you what to say, what to do, how much medicine to prescribe and the dosage. There's no thought that's going to be going on. It's going to be automated, and it's going to be logged and checked. And if you're going against the algorithm, you will be flagged immediately. This is the extent. Sounds like it's a science fiction thing, but it's not. So that's one side. Now, let's say you're out. I'll use my generation as a template. When I graduated and passed my board certification, that was it. I'm board certified. Nobody can ever take that from me. If I'm a bad doctor and I practice bad medicine, I can lose my license. But technically, I'm still board certified, okay? That's what it used to be. Now they're talking about having maintenance of certification, MOC. That's a new made-up testing cycle system that the boards have come up with. And the specialty boards, in my opinion, are completely traitorous and are worse than the AMA, because they're coming up with a scheme that you have to take tests about every 6 weeks, every 8 weeks. Each test, by the way, costs a few $100s. So you're ending up paying about $3,000 to $5,000 a year just to take some crazy test that'll allow you to maintain your certification. That means if I say I'm not doing that, that's ridiculous, then I not only lose my license to practice medicine, but I will lose my board certification. I mean, this is what it's come to. It is completely mercenary. So I can choose not to take Medicaid, Medicare. I can choose not to be a killer in that 007 system. But unless I play the game and pay these thieves money, I'm not going to be able to practice medicine. They trump us, basically. OBGYN is doing it. The obstetrician gynecologists are in that system now. I understand now from a colleague that the urologist are also moving towards that system. And I'm looking at my database in the ENT section, and I'm seeing them start to have maintenance of certification, module, basically, that they're coming up with. And doctors have no idea what's coming down the pipe. Not only are we getting fingerprinted and treated like criminals, but now we're going to have to pay for the privilege beyond what we do, beyond CME. This is crazy.
That's beyond crazy.
It is beyond crazy.
You know, it's like you and the urologist, the gynecologist, there's no test after you've been board certified and you've been practicing X number of years.
Mm-hmm.
There's no test in the world that's better than the patient that's looking up at you and saying, "Help me." A test, they can't come up with a test like that. They can't,
but it's not
they're
about
wasting
tests.
Your time, you know?
But it's not about that, Dave. What it's about is in ingraining an evidence-based approach to medicine. That's a big, fancy way of putting pharmaceutical-based, government-driven, government entity-driven. They have all of these systems in place, these bureaucracies under Obamacare that decide what diseases will be covered, what medications will be covered and allowed to be paid for, how long it should take you to get better as a patient, depending on your age and your underlying medical condition, whether you even are allowed to have these medications and these treatments used on you. This is what we're talking about. All they've managed to do or are managing to do now is make doctors unwilling and in some cases willing participants in the system. The system can't run without doctors. They can hope for it. They've tried to do it, and they're in the process of making us as superfluous as possible, but it still can't run without us. So to cover the droves of doctors who are leaving, retiring, and getting out of it, they're going to try to corral the younger set. I'm not ready to retire yet. I have 20-plus years left to treat patients. They're trying to keep me in the people like me in the system by forcing me into it, by making my licensure tied to it, by making my certification, by making my ability to practice medicine in a hospital tied to playing their game. This is the time, like every patient, this is the time for you to stand up and say, I'm not paying $20,000. for this crap if you want to call Obamacare. I'm not going to do it. And for us as physicians, we need to stop playing the game. Once you sign that contract, they own you by the short hairs. Don't sign it. It may look great. You may be making a couple hundred thousand a year, maybe, and they're paying your, you know, your insurance, et cetera. But you better believe if you have a patient that needs your help and you want to do it your way, you can't. They're going to break you down and demoralize you and use you. And that's what the bottom line is.
Okay, we're talking, let's say, $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That would certainly cover, more than cover, going to a general practitioner and having your physical.
Shoot. It's about $150 to go to a doctor, let's say.
Okay.
That's about $300 two times a year. Yeah, you're right. It does more than cover that.
But then you go, you have your physical, and he or she says, you really need to have a colonoscopy. It's time. Mm-hmm. So he or she sends you to a specialist, a gastroenterologist, and so then you've got the cost of that specialist, or you've got a continual sinus infection, so they send the patient to you. So where do we go? And then you say, well, you're getting sinus infections because of whatever, and I recommend outpatient surgery. The total cost mm-hmm. is going to be X amount. So how do you, because we've been trained that, anything past $500, you know, the insurance is going to take care of it. Well, I've found out that's not true either. But how do you get this point across to the public that, you know, save your money, don't spend it on stupid insurance, it's not going to pay for it anyway, and start going out of the system?
Well, let's break it down for patients then. If you're in an insurance plan and you pay, let's say, $300-$500 a month for your insurance, all that does is cover you as saying, I have insurance coverage. That's all it does. It doesn't do anything else. It doesn't pay for the most part, unless you've got a really good plan. But, of course, you're going to get a 25% tax on that plan. If you have a really good plan, they'll probably make it unaffordable. But that's another point. So let's say you're paying $500 a month, but you have something called a deductible, which is anywhere from $500 to, I've seen, $10,000. That means that you have to pay between $500 and $10,000 out of your pocket before insurance will start paying a dime. So now you're paying, you know, thousands of dollars a year with the expectation that if you really do go to the doctor, you're going to pay another X number of thousands, depending on what your problem is, before the insurance kicks in a dime. They're just getting free money, basically.
Well, wait a second. Like I don't have an extra $15,000 in my savings account. So what's going to happen to me?
You don't go to the doctor. I've had plenty of people who have insurance come into my office who can't afford to be treated because their insurance plans are, you know, not even Ponzi schemes. It's just robbing you. So you're paying for the privilege of paying more and saying that you have insurance coverage. And I can guarantee you under Obamacare, that will get worse because now it's only between you and your insurance company that what gets covered. So if you don't like a plan and they don't cover balloon sinuplasty, for example, you can move on to a different insurance, and maybe they'll cover it. But when the government makes the pronouncement, they set the standard. That means every insurance company is going to be offering the same thing. It becomes a one-size-fits-all. And it's not based on, you know, free market system. It's not based on, if I offer this person balloon sinuplasty, then I'm going to get more patients to come into my insurance company because I'm offering something that they really want. That's done. There's not going to be competition. It's going to be a race to the bottom. And the government is going to decide, we have 300 plus million people in this country. We can't afford to take care of them. We're going to give you basically hospice care if you're really old. We're going to give you NICU care, perhaps, if we think that you're worthy, maybe after you do a DNA test on your child. And everybody in between, if you're not a worker, then you're a useless feeder, and we're going to find out some way to warehouse you. That's how the government thinks. It's not like it's warm and fuzzy. It's not like it cares. What it cares about is getting more power, more money, and having you work for the privilege of doing so. And shut up. That's how it works. I mean, people really need to stop thinking and somebody cares. The government cares about me. People in Congress care about me. No, they don't. They care about staying in power, and they care about sucking up to you long enough so you vote for them again. That's all they care about. The fact that they can say with a straight face that drones are legal and ethical, killing Americans by drones is legal and ethical and the right thing to do, is obscene. And nobody says a thing about that. There's no judge or jury. There's no habeas corpus. They're just executing people that they don't like. And this is okay. And as long as we sit here and say, I want to put my head up because I want to be a good soldier or I want to be a good citizen or be perceived to be, they're going to keep taking advantage of us. I just want to see my patients. I don't want to make a wave. You know what I mean? I just want to do my job and go home. Well, if you have that attitude, you are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break on that. We'll be back right after this.
At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, they provide better quality care. They believe that excellent medical care is a right and not a privilege. They are concerned that the current economy has forced people to sacrifice their health. They have therefore reduced their prices to make it more affordable. They will continue to provide state-of-the-art care. They continue to believe that patient care counts above all else. Peachtree ENT Center, concierge medicine without the concierge price. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment or for more information. They are located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest, Suite 260 North Tower, 2 blocks south of Piedmont Hospital.
Moms, dads, listen to my radio program, Homeschooling for Today, on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you'll learn all about how to homeschool on America's Web Radio.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back on Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George. And, you know, we keep hearing this. We've heard it now for how many years? Wake up call, wake up call.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will be, as things progress, people will start getting the needle in their posterior and start realizing what they have signed up for. And, you know, it's like everything else. It's cooperation. The patient needs to work with the doctors. The doctors need to listen to the patients and work with the patients. And, you know, one person can't do it all, but a group of us can sure make a difference. And, you know, you mentioned our politicians just wanting to be reelected. I wouldn't vote at this point. I wouldn't vote for one of them. I want a clean slate.
I can't disagree with you there. I think that they're out of touch. I think that they could care less about what we want. I mean, we should have seen the writing on the wall from the time that they passed TARP, you know, and when the majority of the country said don't do it, and they did it anyway.
Yep.
You know, that should have been the beginning of the end, when the majority of the country said we don't want Obamacare, and they did it anyway. And, you know, the gun control issue. A majority of the country actually does not want changes in that, and they're still doing their darndest to try to push something through that's not about saving anybody. It's about control. I mean, if you think about that argument for just one second in a critical manner, critically thinking. If you take guns away from law-abiding citizens, but you don't touch the criminals because they're not coming forward to give up anything, what you've managed to do is make a majority of the country sitting ducks, targets for these people to come and do what they want to. And there's not a policeman in the world that's going to be able to get there fast enough and in all situations when you're under duress or you're under attack. What sense does that make? It's not the law-abiding citizens that are killing people. It's the criminals. They're making everybody either a racist or, you know, a psychopath, or it's something. They're demonizing law-abiding citizens. And the problem is too many people who are decent are sitting there and letting themselves be demonized. I can't do that.
No, nor can I. We've let the media brainwash us. We've let the media control our thinking totally. Yeah, you know, as an EMT, and when you were doing your residency and your rotation through the ER, I bet you saw many, many, many more car wreck victims than you saw, quote-unquote, assault rifle victims. And, you know, and an ER gets it all. But I still bet you saw more. And if it were a domestic situation, probably more beatings than shootings. We picked up a number certainly we picked up some shooting victims. But as far as our general emergency run, it was for car wrecks. And like people have said, and they're trying to do that in their own way, I guess. Do we do away with cars?
Well, hey, they are trying to do away with that.
That's right.
The whole green energy movement is about, you know, taking away your rights in a big way. I mean, they're putting smart meters in homes. I've read articles where the police are called by the electrical company to by force put on these smart meters in someone's home under gunpoint. This is no longer free will here. It's no longer, well, I don't really want to go along with this. Well, you're going to whether you like it or not. Either you'll be done, you know, you'll be demonized as some sort of outlier, which of course means you're racist, sexist, homophobic, or whatever the name, the label they want to throw at you to make you feel bad. That's the social version of it. Now they're just coming in with police and guns drawn, and you sit there and take it. It's just a short path, really, to making you have to get vaccines, making your child now have to come to school so they can't be homeschooled. You know, all these things that once you open the door to, it's going to get really crazy. They're talking in the youth. I don't think it's the youth. No. I think it's here in this country of putting RFID tags for people who are on public assistance. So if you're getting any kind of welfare with benefit cards and that sort of thing, they want to microchip you to make sure you're not, quote, cheating the system. You know? Whatever the government owns and you take from them, they get to run the show. This is just the beginning. Once they do that to that group of folks, it's coming for everybody else. I mean, can't people actually see that? Right. If it happens to one group in our country, there is nobody who would deserve something to happen to them, because as soon as you do that, you're next. So now it sounds great when they want to talk about controlling calories for people on public assistance and the obesity thing. You know, you can't buy, I know that's coming, you can't buy soft drinks, you can't buy cigarettes, you can't buy anything on electronic benefit cards. And people who aren't think it's great because you're controlling someone else's behavior. But because of the cost in healthcare, the next thing it's going to be is, well, it's now starting in school. They're going to take out, you know, junk food. And they're going to put in, quote, healthy alternatives. And that includes diet soda, really. So, you know, it's rolling. It's happening right in front of your face. And you're still thinking it's going to affect somebody else, but not you. You're really deluded if you think that.
You know, as long as you're talking food, I've got to bring up the fact, too, that it came out Monday that particularly in Afghanistan, even though they'd been doing it until just recently, they've cut off feeding our troops hot meals for breakfast. The troops are now being fed the MREs, and no more hot meals, hot breakfast. And yet they can still serve hot lunches and they can still serve hot dinners, but they've decided that our troops don't need hot breakfast in the morning.
Is there a reason behind that? Did they give a reason?
Demoralization.
Well, I think they've done a great job by deploying them multiple times. What else do they want to demoralize? I mean, I understand 22 veterans commit suicide every day in this country. So there's something wrong with that system. Something is happening to these folks emotionally. I mean, fatigue would be the minimum. God knows what else is going on with those guys. I mean, I can't even imagine.
We don't, and that's very scary. What they're doing, what they're vaccinating our military with, we don't know. And I, you know, you never hear about that. You hear about the one shooter that goes in and kills 20 people, but you don't hear about, just like you said, the number of our kids, our heroes that take their own lives because of what the government's done to them. And the mass media isn't, all they can focus on is lies, and that's what Sandy Hook was a lie. And it's terrible. I want to make one point, if you don't mind, Dr. George, and that is that, you know, you get the knock on the door, and, yeah, you're going to probably succumb. But if your neighbors all support you, or all the doctors in the building supported that one doctor that's getting the knock on the door, we would start changing things. We have to organize. We have to work together to tell somebody knocking on our door to take it and shove it.
It starts with just standing up for your rights, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's tough, you know, if you've got people, you know, somebody knocks on my door and 20 of my neighbors walk outside armed, I think it's going to make somebody else think twice. I love the fact that many of our sheriff associations, state sheriff associations, and sheriffs themselves are standing up. We're not going to enforce a stupid gun law. So I think maybe it's coming.
I hope so. But, you know, this has been years in the making. I think it started back, I mean, I'm sure it's further back than I'm going to use this analogy, but my recollection, it started back with the churches, with this partnership of the government giving churches money. Again, whoever controls the purse strings controls the message, controls the behavior. You've got churches now saying, you know, as if they're talking points for the government. You know, they're agents of the government. You have the AMA, which is, it's a lobby organization. It's not about doctor care. It's not about protecting doctors and patients. It's about what else can we do to create something that we get paid for. They're the brains behind the coding system. They work with insurance companies. UnitedHealthcare is the biggest monster. It's amazing how huge that company is. It just changes its name. It has little ancillary tentacles. But it controls healthcare in a big way. And whatever the AMA and UnitedHealthcare want to do, that's what happens.
So, you know, it's amazing, too. It's a very young corporation in reality. UnitedHealthcare only started in the 1980s, I believe.
Well, it's gangbusters now.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the bigger picture, again, this is not just about the United States. This is about globalism. It's about UN-driven healthcare. We're the last country, and I said it before, to sign on to the ICD-10 system. You know, that's the global healthcare socialized medicine system, where once you put the code in, you get paid a flat fee, a flat rate, and your standard of care now just drops to the rest of the world. We're still in the process of making the transition. I'm not sure, I mean, As a group of physicians, you know, as a group, I think we're in trouble. But individually, as long as there's some of us who want to not do this, patients will have an alternative, and the healthcare system here will not sink to the depth that they want it to. It's on its way. I'm not going to tell you it's not. But I think that a lot of things have been put into place. I think a lot of good doctors have left the system. A lot of the young folks have no idea what good medicine is, and you have now an influx of global physicians coming in into our system to provide care. And what they care about is, hey, I got out of my country. I'm getting paid more than I can ever dream of being paid. I'll do whatever you want me to do. Just let me stay. That's the mentality.
That's...
I mean, there's Caribbean medical schools are popping up everywhere. That's just the beginning, but in our backyard. And I can tell you that I wouldn't let those doctors touch my cat. I'm sorry. But it's like here, No Child Left Behind. They're not studying for the sake of knowledge. They're studying to take a test. And they practice that board test over and over again, the test to, not the board certification that we take as specialists or when you finish training, but you have to take three parts of a board in order to be able to get, to have to finish your medical degree and get a license. That test, they know their answers to the test. They take the test, and of course they do well on it, but when it comes down to taking care of patients, they don't have a clue. And I'll tell you an example which will make your hair probably stand up.
Let's hold that. Let's get the example right after a break, and we'll hold that thought, and we'll be back right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that nasal stuffiness can cause snoring and decrease the amount of oxygen that your body receives? A decrease in oxygen to the brain can cause problems with memory and concentration, and in severe cases, it can cause stroke. A decrease in oxygen to the heart can lead to high blood pressure, and in severe cases, a heart attack. Nasal stuffiness can be caused by exposure to irritants such as dust, mold, pollution, and chemicals. It can also be caused by exposure to trees, grass, and certain foods such as corn, wheat, eggs, soy, milk, and various meats. Medical treatment with nasal sprays and or antihistamines that don't cause drowsiness can alleviate the congestion. It is important not to use over-the-counter spray decongestants since they can be addictive and actually make breathing more difficult. See your doctor for a complete evaluation of your nose. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back on Medicine on Call, and I'm waiting to hear the example that you've got.
Okay, the example is a nurse that I was just having a conversation with who's been in the profession for over 25 years and is an old-school nurse. That means she trained on the front line with a collegial mentality towards physicians. So doctors and nurses at that point worked as a team, and everybody had a job to do. That's now gone. I mean, she's now left nursing. She used to be an ICU nurse. That's a major skill set, that to be an ICU nurse. I mean, you have taken care of the sickest patients in the hospital. And she left because doctors were no longer really staffing the ICU, and they were expecting nurses to do invasive procedures and basically be doctors because there wasn't any. Now, that was something that she said, I'm not going to go there with you. I'm out of here because of liability. But she also told me that she's also experienced, since she left the ICU, working with physicians, these physicians who come from out of training, newly, you know, in the last 5 years kind of thing, some of them foreign grads, who don't know clinical, are not good clinically. Let's just put it out there. And she was told by her supervisors that she was on the hook, that she was responsible for the doctors, what the doctors did, because she should know better. It's not on them anymore. The fact that they don't know and they can't do things clinically is not their problem. It was going to be her problem. So she's now going to have to take on liability for less than doctors. And she left. And that's the position that we're finding ourselves in. God forbid you end up in a hospital these days. I think an average hospital no longer has the quality of health care that it had 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It's completely different. You've got PAs, MAs, all the nursing aides. That's the front line of care. It's not a physician anymore.
And then you throw on top of it, even the physicians are hospitalists. They don't know me from Adam's house cat, you know?
That's true. That's a whole other problem. It's continuity of care. So you have somebody who doesn't know you. Your physician who admitted you or sent you to the hospital, in some cases, is not allowed to take care of you. doesn't know what's going on until you're discharged again. That's unacceptable. I agree with you there. That's a flaw in the setup of how the hospital is working. But then you tack on the fact that the person taking care of you is probably the least experienced, the least knowledgeable, and has the most responsibility, and then you're really in trouble. And then, I forget, there's new regulations that are coming down the pipe. So under Medicare guidelines, which of course will go through everybody, certain things will no longer be paid for as per Medicare. If you have a surgery and you get an infection post-op, that's considered, hey, that should never happen, so we're not going to pay for it. That's the most asinine thing I've ever heard of. Things happen. People go in with infections that are undiagnosed and then end up blooming post-op. I can understand if you fall in the hospital, you know, that's not a good thing, or a bed sore. But still, things happen. I don't think that you should be on the hook at the hospital for things that are sometimes out of your control, that the government says you should never have that happen. The next thing they're going to say, it's criminal if it happens. That's the next thing. Where does it stop? So all the people who have no frontline contact with the patient are deciding what's supposed to happen in the doctor-patient relationship and in providing patient care, even down to the operative note. Someone will decide that my operative note is insufficient. What I said I did, I didn't do. Are you kidding me? I mean, who would practice in this kind of environment? Well, nobody of any worth or note would do that.
You can't.
You can't.
You know, with that, it's sort of like hospitals are at the point right now, you go into the emergency room or you're hospitalized, you've got a hospitalist or you've got someone ordering your care, and they may order something, you may get it, and then thinking that your insurance, well, I'm in here, I'm paying my copay or whatever, and then the insurance company comes back and says, well, you know, because you cut your finger in the hospital and you got a Band-Aid that was $27, but you were in there for a nose problem or whatever, those are not related, so we're not paying for those Band-Aids. And all of a sudden you're not only paying for your copay, but you're also paying for a treatment that wasn't even, you can easily be charged for treatment that isn't prescribed under your insurance policy.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? What you do, if that ever happens to you, is you go to the finance department and demand an itemization of your bill. So instead of getting miscellaneous for $20,000, you don't know what that is, you make them break it out and itemize it. And then you decide, and then you say, why did I need that? And trust me, most of the time it'll be written off. That's what you need to do as a patient. Stand up for your rights. And then you gave a perfect example of ordering things that are not necessary. Remember, HCA was I don't think they were sued or at least called out on the fact that they were ordering unnecessary tests in their emergency room, unnecessary CTs, unnecessary lab tests, just to increase the price. Now, I've worked at hospitals where they were calling ENT consults for the stupidest reasons. It's like, I think they have earwax. Well, did you look in the ear? No, I don't have an otoscope. Are you kidding me? This is why you're calling an ENT consult? Meanwhile, that consult costs the patient, and the hospital gets to bill for the consult. So I was getting consulted by foot patients doctors had never even laid eyes on. I took offense to that. I never went back to that hospital. But that's probably going on 24/7 because it's all about business. It's not about patient care. You know, so I can't even begin to describe how bad this system is on so many levels. And by being part of it without, you know, sticking up for your rights, making a stink, and no longer participating, you're complicit and you're driving this. I wrote a blog a while back that said the answer to affordable health care is non-participation. And that means on the patient side and the doctor side. My recommendation is you see a doctor who's not hospital-based, that you see a private doctor freestanding. That's my first recommendation. The second thing is to look at your insurance plan critically. If you're healthy, you don't have any medical problems, you're on no medications, don't get the Cadillac, get the comprehensive, where it's catastrophic, and then get something like Aflac, which is supplemental, so that that covers you in case something bad happens, and you're not paying tons of money out of pocket. The next thing I would do, if you had a big policy where you had $10,000, let's say, out of pocket, is you talk to the independent physician about, hey, let's come up with a plan, a financial plan that we can work together, that we can both have a win-win situation. I'll pay you cash. I want a discount. Done. It would happen. And it happens every day. They can send you to surgery centers that are a fraction of what the hospital is. They can send you to outpatient radiology centers that are a fraction of what you pay in a hospital, labs that don't cost half as much. Healthcare right now is totally arbitrarily inflated, and you're going to get the worst bang for your buck if you go into a hospital system. And my problem is everything is being geared towards the hospitals running the show, and we're allowing that as patients and doctors to happen. We need to stop that trend, and then we can take control of our health.
Dr. George, tell people how they can get your blog, how they can find you. We don't ever go into that, and we should every show.
I know we should. DrElenaGeorge.com is my blog. I'm actually going to be on TV today on Atlanta & Company at 11 o'clock this morning. So if you're a Georgia listener, you can watch me there. And obviously tune in to Medicine on Call. And you can also email me. So through my website or through Dave here at America's Web Radio. We have to stick together. I love what I do, but I'm not going to become a victim. I refuse that. So I want to bring as many folks who have that mindset along with me, because we can win this battle.
We can, and it's a matter of sticking together. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, and we'll be back with Dr. George next week on Medicine on Call. As always, Dr. George, thank you for being you.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, listeners.
And we'll talk to you next week.